Hello and welcome to Columboys, the podcast all about the gritty, real, dramatically recreated world of Lieutenant Columbo. I'm Mac, and with me as always is Ben. Hello, Ben.
Hey, Mac.
Hey, this week we're taking a look at Season 10, Episode 2, Caution, Murder Can Be Hazardous to Your Health. This episode sees the return of previous culprit George Hamilton as the host of a crime show that is legally distinct from Unsolved Mysteries in just enough ways to not be legally actionable. George Hamilton is best role for his known on Dynasty, his turn as Zorro in Zorro the Great Gay Blade, and for being a human pan-fried dumpling. This episode also stars Penny Johnson-Gerald, who appeared as civilian freighter Captain Cassidy Yates on Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
There it is.
And as the president's terrorist wife on 24, the world's most inexplicably popular television show.
The president's terrorist wife?
The president's wife was a terrorist on 24.
Oh, okay. I never watched that show.
Yeah, you shouldn't. It's bad. but I'll tell you what show isn't bad, Columbo.
And that depends this episode, on the episode.
I enjoyed. So we're going to get into it. I like this episode a lot, actually.
What makes you think we're going to get into it?
We're going to get into it. I feel like I'm getting a negative energy from you.
We're
going
to get into the... I mean, it's a super 90s episode, but like...
It's a super 90s episode, but I feel like it's a super 90s episode of Columbo.
Oh, sure.
This is classic-ass Columbo. There's a couple stuff which is a little grimy, but somehow even the grimiest stuff in this episode is, to me, more palatable than the Playboy Mansion stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
No. I mean, I'm not surprised that the words "I agree" are coming out of my mouth. Surprised is not the right word, but it is the, like, oh, yeah, that's a definitive. Like, this is a much more coherent thing kind of bolted together in a way that makes sense.
I think this might be, as far as the murder mystery parts of it, one of the most coherent episodes of Columbo as far as like the actual murder mystery.
Yeah.
Because this episode actually does the thing that I always have, throughout the entire span of this show, have complained about. The show doesn't give you the tools to solve the mystery. It just reveals something suddenly that you couldn't have possibly known.
Right.
This episode literally gives you every single step, and I think
it walks you through fucking everything. It's actually, yeah. No, you're right. I mean, that is great because it's Columbo, right? So obviously there's the whole, like, he did the murder, you're watching him set up for the murder and stuff. But at the same time, this one, it's like when Columbo kind of pulls at things, they're either things that you already know or they're things that you could deduce on your own if you're paying attention, as opposed to like waiting for Columbo to sort of drop the other shoe.
Yeah. So just for an example. So, the basic premise is that, this host of this show, Wade Anders, who's basically kind of a Robert Stack character, but he's not an actor. He's a former security guy.
Expert or something like that.
Security expert of some type, yes.
Expert or consultant or something. But security.
But he got this job over this veteran newsman who works in the same network.
Right.
Is still very bitter about it.
Yes, Bud is extremely bitter about it. Even though Bud is apparently a newscaster on the 11 p.m. news, it's like that's
in LA, which is probably not bad, but it's not national.
Sure.
So he wants it to be national, you know.
Yeah, that's fair.
So Bud has learned that Wade Anders appeared in a porno. They say porno so much in this episode.
They say
it
porno
makes me happy every single time.
Except for the one time when Columbo calls it a party film.
A party film. I'm like, why are you being coy now? You've said porno like 13,000 times. You're standing in a porno. Well, we'll get there.
Yeah.
You're
standing in a,
So he did a porno way back in the day, which is great. I love that at a certain point they do say Wade Anders did a porno.
Yeah.
Like, they just say that, and every time they say it, it just fills me with glee.
I know.
Because you never hear porno anymore. It's porno is just porn now.
Yeah, it's porn.
And porno is so nostalgic. Remember pornos? Pornos were like a weird thing that didn't exist back in the day. Porn is now omnipresent and everywhere. It's hard to escape from porn. But porno was like this weird ephemeral thing that was hidden away in bookstores and in movie theaters.
I was going
to
say,
was impossible to access.
Like hidden away in movie theaters and questionable shops in the back, or if you were some areas of the South in quote-unquote private clubs in rental shops where you had to have a key to their back room.
But this was the age of porno in which this is sort of when we were growing up, and around about this time was when you and I would have started being interested in porno. So,
well, it's
like this was the porno that existed at that time, where it was like you couldn't access it as a child.
Right.
You couldn't go online and just get all the porn in the world directly into your face.
Yeah, it wasn't the sort of thing where you could just turn around and literally Google and you would get
exactly.
so many results that you should never, ever see in your entire life.
Where you couldn't accidentally, the only way you would accidentally find porn is if you were running around in the woods and you found a stash of Playboys, which inexplicably is the most universal experience in the world. Every 90s kid has found porn in the woods.
Thank you. A joke got made about that in something I watched recently, and I don't remember if it was actually porn or if it was like somebody made a reference to, you know, like a veiled idea, but it was the same thing where it was like, why was that so fucking universal? That like kids on their bikes in their neighborhoods would fucking stumble across somebody's like stash of nudie mags.
Because porn was so like porno was so like taboo that that you had to, you couldn't even keep it in the house. It was, you had to keep it in a bush somewhere, or in a hollowed out log, you know, somewhere in the forest where you could get up to your dark business. But you know, now it's literally everywhere.
Yeah.
But anyway, I just wanted to get into that because it's such a weird, it was, I mean, it's a time of our youth. It is sort of a weird nostalgic thing.
Oh yeah. It's super strange.
But he appeared in this porn. Mm-hmm. The less fun detail is that apparently appeared in a form in the porn with an underage girl.
Right.
That's not as much fun.
No, that's super not fun. I mean, and it's the thing that like Bud leads with when he when he confronts Wayne Anders. What a great
and
name!
It does,
Wayne
it doesn't
Anders
come up
did a porno.
They do mention it that one time. It does not return. Like at no point is it ever mentioned again.
Right. It's almost like they went, we don't have time for that subplot. Let's cut that out.
that's too much.
Yeah.
It's too much. So he says he's going to take this tape to the network. I don't remember. There's some benefactor who doesn't actually appear in the show, but there's some producer.
Yeah, he's ostensibly the guy who is the producer or otherwise oversees
who cast Wade in this role. And so he's going to take this to that guy, and then he's going to get him kicked off the show unless he resigns.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's a little snippet early on when we get introduced to the show and Wayne, and then Max, who is, I think, the director?
Yes. Maxine Jarrett, played by Penny Johnson.
Yeah. And she's great, but she mentions explicitly the benefactor. Jake Salzberg is who they're talking about. And she basically says, you're doing great. Everybody loves you. Basically in that, like, hey, It's good. Don't get cocky. If our ratings dip even a little bit, he's going to fire your ass. And it's like, well, it seems pretty tenuous. I mean, not to say that, you know, there wouldn't be a guy like that. But
Wade himself is very cocky, though.
Yes.
He's convinced that the ratings will never go down.
Well, of course he is. He's being played by George Hamilton.
If you're a younger viewer and you don't know what Unsolved Mysteries was, it was exactly what this show, well, and it was also UFO,
right?
There was a lot more to it.
It started with like unsolved cases and like criminal fugitives and like FBI's most wanted and stuff. And
but then they had to fill time,
right? Because
so,
they made a shitload of episodes of that show.
Yeah, and then it came in. It basically became like kind of Ripley's Believe It or Not. Like, did this person talk to the ghost of their father? And like, okay, I was confused about what the show was about.
Yeah, and then
it kind of was all over the place.
No, I kind of love that it took that weird turn of like, we got to keep it on the air, but we don't have enough crime stories, so let's do this weirdo shit because. Fundamentally, that's the reason why Jonathan Frakes got to do that fact or fiction bullshit.
Right. That's why, the Ripley's, it was an offshoot of the Jack Palance Ripley's Believe It or Not, which is
also,
that's amazing as well.
Mm-hmm.
if you are listening to this podcast, you have some YouTube assignments ahead of you. You got Unsolved Mysteries, you got Fact or Fiction.
And Dick Tracy. And, no, I'm just kidding.
And Dick Tracy.
No, please don't do that to yourself.
That's a callback. That's fun. We don't usually do callbacks to previous episodes.
Well, I mean, Hamilton, he was,
was that even a conversation we had on the air, or was that a conversation we had after we stopped recording?
Mac, I don't know anymore.
I don't even know. Yeah. Okay. Basically, here's the thing. If we didn't talk about Dick Tracy, just go watch Dick Tracy, the Warren Beatty Dick Tracy.
No,
it's fucking crazy.
No, don't do that. Yeah.
No, do it.
No, really, you don't want to. It's so bad.
No, do it. What else are you doing right now? You can't leave the house. Just go watch.
There are
so
many things you could watch that are better than that movie.
Do it. Fucking do it.
Yeah. I mean.
Go do it. All right. So so he brings him this story that he's writing. He's written it out like a lead story for the show with a title and everything. Did you get the title down? This is like the one title I didn't write down.
No, I didn't write I don't think I wrote that title down. Should have, because it was ridiculous.
I wrote down some titles later. We'll get to that. So he's written out this story, hands it to George Hamilton. This is a real, so apparently we're just going to talk about like 90s kids nostalgia stuff right now, but
yikes.
That letter that he had written out, or the story.
Oh, on the dot matrix printer.
On the dot matrix printer with the like word processor 1990s font is so specific.
Yeah.
And like, that's like a sense memory for me. That like takes me back to writing essays in school.
I will be honest with you. When that scene, when the murder goes down, and because I mean, God, I just, it's like, I want to talk about all of these things and I'm just tripping over my own tongue, obviously Bud, you know, wants to blackmail, Wayne, to get
Wade.
The job. Yeah. Is it Wade? I thought it was Wayne.
It's Wade. Wade. Nope.
No.
Wade.
Was it?
Wade.
God.
Yep.
How did I write that downright wrong so much in my notes? Because like, there's literally that shot of the back of his like chair on set, and they and they push in on it. How did I anyway?
I don't know.
My brain is broken. but so anyway, so Bud is trying to, you know, wants to blackmail him to get the job. They agree to meet, which is at Bud's house, and Wade. Basically poisons like some smokes and, you know,
So he doses them with, pure nicotine basically.
Yeah. What was that?
So
nicotine something. I'm trying to remember
something
what
something or other,
it.
But it's basically the pure form of nicotine. And if you smoke this, you will die.
Oh,
it basically
nicotine sulfate.
You know, it basically That's gives it. You a nicotine overdose and you die.
Yep.
You have a very similar reaction to, just a normal heart failure. If from smoking too much.
Right. But it's just the, yeah. So basically he, you know, smugly kind of leads Bud along after swapping cigarettes out, watching him like pull this, you know, pull a drag, knowing that he is going to die within minutes. And it's kind of an amazing scene, especially for when Bud finally realizes that he can't breathe, you know, and then, it's crazy, but also like it's a great scene because Hamilton's like expressions in this episode.
Or lack thereof.
Well, no, he's definitely got expressions, but there's a lot of that, like, smooth-faced, like, just calm demeanor, but then there's, like, it's like...
Well, he's so like, dead, yeah. Facially dead in that scene.
Right.
It's chilling. Yeah, you know, it's actually a pretty good performance.
That's the thing, is because it's like, you see him, you can see sort of, like, the pleasure creep into his face as... Basically, his butt dies, and it's just like it makes it really, really awful. It's really well done. But so then after that, he like takes the cigarettes and puts them into a Ziploc bag, and then replaces them with cigarettes that don't have poison in them. And it's great because like you watch him sort of burn down cigarettes and prep this poison one, and then put this stuff into a bag.
He does it in the office, in his own office, inexplicably.
Yeah.
I guess just so he can fabricate
an alibi. Yeah. So he does all this stuff, and then he like edits the security tapes afterwards so that it looks
There's a security camera in his office that records like comings and goings basically and nothing else. And it looks like he makes it look like he was in his office while he was off murdering Bud.
But it was like he got dressed into the same outfit like the evening prior. Yeah, it's really great because they do come back to like all of these points and Columbo kind of pulls at the threads and unravels, you know, the things that you're like, yeah, that's right. He would notice that. That's really smart.
That's the thing that I really like about this script is there isn't a scene that happens for no reason.
Yeah.
And even the stuff that seems like it happens for no reason has like a plot significance to it.
Right.
If you're paying attention to it.
Right. Even the scene
which I think is the part
dancers.
That's rewarding.
Yeah.
That's just happening at a place.
That's
but just background noise.
Yeah. No, yeah. But so back to the computer. So like when he takes the VHS tape of the porno and he deletes the story off of the computer, puts in a floppy disk of his own stories, and then prints that out to like put it.
Let's
on
talk about this floppy disk for a second.
Okay,
let's talk about this floppy disk first.
What the 3.5-inch floppy?
It's a 3.5-inch floppy. Mm-hmm. He goes to a 3.5-inch floppy. Store which has unused stories for his show, and he pulls out a floppy disk, and written on that floppy disk are four titles for episodes.
Yep.
There's Can't Buy Love, Cheerleaders, Selling,
Ugh.
Escape to Death, and America Under Fire. And he very well okay. We say he. This is very clearly not George Hamilton that does this. This is very clearly second unit footage. There is a lot of second unit footage in this.
Oh, yeah.
Of hands putting tapes into things, removing labels, pointing at things, indicating things on a desk. It's very clear that when they went to edit this episode, they did not have enough of things indicating things and needed to go back.
Yep. There are definitely some pickup shots in there
which definitely helps this episode, which it's surprising. It's good that they did it because it makes it a lot more legible.
Yeah,
but it's also incredibly noticeable.
Oh yeah, yeah. But it's very good. But yeah, so the thing about that was, am I nuts? Like I had this moment where I listened to that drive hum.
Yeah.
And in my brain, I went, "That sounds like a Macintosh." And
I don't know. I don't know. I'm not sensitive enough to know that.
Well,
but here's
I will you, say you it's talk been long enough. I haven't gone back to like review, but it was just one of those things where it was like some of those noises are like remind me of the sort of signature way that the drives in a Mac would sound as they were accessing. And it doesn't mean that
if you want to talk about a computer. A component not being what it should be. Let's talk about the 3.5 floppy that Wade pulls out of his pocket while he's doing the murder, which is a completely different floppy. It has like eight stories written on it instead of four.
Shit.
When he goes to open it in the screen, there's a list of all the stories that are on there, and I just want to give it. So of course we still have. Can't Buy Love, mm-hmm. and America Under Fire and Escape to Death.
Of course.
The cheerleaders, comma, selling is cheerleaders selling sports with sex. So I guess just sort of a more general expose about, you know, moral panic about cheerleaders.
Okay.
We've got back to school, fashion conscious adolescence, which that's a real barn burner.
Ooh,
I can't imagine why they didn't do that. We've got Our Violent Cities and Comedy and Therapy and one more that's slightly racist. So I'm going to leave it alone.
Yeah. You can tell me that when we're done with this episode, but
I don't even need to bother. It's not
that great.
Interesting.
Huh? Yeah.
It's just vaguely racist and not interesting. Mm, so I decided to leave it by, and we're giving it more power by continuing to talk about it. But I just love how
that it went from four stories to eight.
It went from four stories to eight, and they clearly had to redo the thing where he selects the floppy disk, because when they get to the edit bay, they're like, oh, we never established where he got that floppy disk from.
Oh shit. Yeah, we better show that.
What did that floppy disk look like? It definitely said America Under Fire. There was Can't Buy Love. There's something about cheerleaders, I think.
God.
It's such a great dumb thing.
Did anybody
thing.
Take notes? No.
The continuity, they go desperately looking through continuity photos, trying to find a picture of the disc, and they can't find one.
God.
But so he, we have gone so far, we haven't even fully explained the murder yet.
I know,
so,
we just fell in a hole.
So he prints out this, Escape to Death. This other story about a kidnapped woman from Minneapolis, I believe. Then he puts that on the table in place of the story about him, which he collects. He also takes the copy of the porno mm-hmm. with him when he leaves.
Yep. And the cigarettes on from the desk that Bud smoked previously, which includes the poison cigarette, because, you know, leaving that at the scene would probably be bad. Probably be bad.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So then he murders him and then he covers it up. This episode, the name murder can be hazardous to your health.
Caution. Murder can be caution. Hazardous to your health. Get it? It's like a cigarette pack warning.
Right. But the thing is, the thing on cigarettes is caution, murder may, or cigarettes
smoking,
may be hazardous to your health.
Right.
Not can.
Yeah.
It even, in the episode, when they show a pack of cigarettes, it says may on there.
Yep. That's all right.
Why?
Yeah.
No, it's not all right. I'm mad about it.
Somebody didn't like the alliteration, murder may.
Yeah. They would. Cigarette companies would never be that definite about warnings.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, unless they were forced to. Yeah.
It may be. Who can say?
It might be okay. Whatever. Yeah. We can't guarantee it.
So Columbo is on his shit in this episode.
Yeah.
100% of the time.
Yeah, no, it's really great because, almost right out of the gate when he's on the scene, he notices, basically, hey, these cigarettes have not actually been smoked. Oh, yeah, the dog is actually...
He plays with the dog for a minute in something that seems like it's nothing, mm-hmm. but it actually turns out to be pretty significant.
Yeah.
But, he plays with the dog, and then he goes inside. He notes that all of the cigarettes have not been smoked, or all of the cigarettes in the ashtray on the desk and the one in his hand have not been smoked.
Right. There's no nicotine stains on the filter, meaning no one has pulled smoke through the filter, which was a very good detail.
He looks at the story that the escape to death, and he looks at there's some other stories on Bud's desk that he's working on, and he just notes very subtly that all of the other stories are written in all caps, and the titles are in all caps.
And
Escape to Death is written not in all caps. And he just sort of makes a little note of it. He doesn't say anything about it, but he just kind of looks at it and goes,
Yep.
That's interesting. Yeah, and I mean that's the kind of stuff that I really like.
Yeah.
I like that layered in. I like
it's
it gives you a little bit.
Yeah, the thing that I appreciate is like there's enough kind of little stuff. I mean, between watching the ham like do the sort of setup in his office and then the re-editing of the security footage, which does have a lot of very close shots of pressing buttons in the edit bay.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a wonderful part where he takes that, he puts the tape in.
Mm-hmm.
The tape is just labeled security tape.
Uh-huh.
And then he takes out another tape and someone in the production has written on the label, the words blank, blank tape.
Yep.
They handwrote in the label for a blank tape.
Yep.
And that made me so happy when I saw that. I was besides myself. That's so wonderful.
Yeah, it's very good because that's not what I remember blank VHS tapes being like in my home.
And then he later switches the labels.
Yeah, and it's effortless. I saw that and I was like, that's not how that works.
No,
you would rip that, and then you would have to like use, you know, like Goo Gone and all this other crap to try and get that schmutz off of it. Yeah.
When you put a label on a VHS tape, that label is on the tape forever.
Yeah, it's not coming off without some work. Yeah.
But so he switches out the tape with the edited tape,
the spliced tape. Yeah.
Yeah. It isn't really, it's barely edited. He did was he took the one day and put it on the other. It's not a difficult edit.
Yeah, he took the tail end of the day, prior and kind of put it. Yeah, it's ridiculous. But it's great because between that and then all the little things when he goes to Bud's house, like the dog, you know, greeting him and, you know, jumping in his car excitedly. Very cute dog, by the way.
Golden retriever kind of
real good business in this one with dogs. But like every single one of those things is like there's no red herrings in it. It's all stuff for Columbo to kind of tug at, and it's all stuff that you have already seen in a way. Like the way that they show it to you makes it clear that it's important, and there's enough that they show you that you, like you said, you can piece it together, and that's really. It's really satisfying to sort of be able to see that stuff without having it like, you know, just ham-fisted in blunt exposition. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's a really good. So this guy, Daryl Duke, who directed The Thornbirds, and some other stuff. He does a really good thing where he shows you something over and over again, and it starts to feel like. It starts to feel a little repetitive, but then you're like, but he's doing it for a reason.
Yeah.
When they show you things repetitively, this episode kind of trains you that it's significant, which I think is really a really good thing about it. It doesn't like the more it shows you something and then it later will like reveal this was a significant thing. That's why we kept showing it to you.
Yes.
And that I think it sort of trains the viewer to like pay attention when something's repeated, like, they keep showing me this thing, it must be relevant, which is what happens when you have a competent director who's not just wasting your time.
Something you got on your mind, Mac?
I'm just saying, you know, no specifics, but we've definitely watched a couple Columbos where something keeps coming back and it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, it's just
they're just taking up your time for no reason.
They're just taking the piss.
Yeah. If you're going to bother to establish something, please try to have it pay off.
Yeah.
J.J. Abrams. But anyway, the, So Columbo learns from, Bud's secretary that, the morning before he died, he had a meeting with, Wade Anders and that, they were discussing something. And that's how he gets onto George Hamilton and how the case starts.
Right. It's also establishing what his normal procedure was for writing up a story. And that's when he finds out that the woman who works in the pool right outside his office usually types them up from his voice memos that he records on cassette, and then like that
tape's
missing.
I think that's meant to be his assistant.
Yeah, probably. But it's just the like it's in that open space. I just I didn't catch it, but it's still the like they lay out that process so you can so it's established that like there's another thing for Columbo to think about, and it's great because later on when tapes come up in another way. And, you know, and it's mentioned, like, basically, I think, in a later scene, she offhandedly mentions, the assistant, I guess, offhandedly mentions, about him listening to tapes in his car. You know, then Columbo sort of has that aha moment of, oh, shit, I should check what tapes are in his car. And sure enough, that's the thing that leads him to a voice memo that's like, you got to do this, you got to do this. Also, go talk to blah, blah, blah about, porno.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's what leads him to the porno store.
I know, which is an amazing scene.
Yeah. Which is everything. 100% was filmed in a real porno store. Definitely.
Yeah. It's, wow.
This has a gross verisimilitude to it. The actor who playing the porno store proprietor is actually Robert Donner, who has previously appeared. He was Exeter on Mork and Mindy. I don't know if you were a Mork and Mindy fan.
Oh wow! He was definitely familiar, but I couldn't quite place him. But there you go.
That's his most known thing for me. Mm-hmm. But he's previously appeared in On a Columbo. But yeah, so Columbo goes and learns from this grimy porn store owner that Wade Anders did a porno.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's right. It's like he learns from him, that he sent the tape to Bud because he and Bud were like, buddies in the military.
Friends in the army.
Yeah. Yeah. And Bud was always good to him and whatever. And so he thought Bud would get a kick out of it. Because Wade
he said they didn't
sabotage
they didn't really socialize
chances.
Anymore, but everybody knew how much he hated Wade. So.
Right. Yeah, there's another detail too that I thought was really good. It's not in this scene, but it just reminded me of kind of all the little things.
Okay.
Is they mentioned that Wade Anders like hates smoking, like passionately like loathes smoking and that's such a lovely piece because when it clicks you notice like just how his face like just screws itself up anytime he sees Columbo, and part of that is because Columbo is always walking around with a fucking cigar hanging out of his mouth.
There's that. And it also explains why he thought like he didn't think about the stains on the butts or why the cigarettes, he just burned them down, but didn't like stub them out.
Right.
So they all look basically pristine.
Yeah. They're all pristine versus the ones that you would actually, put out in an ashtray.
They look like they were doctored by a person who doesn't know what a cigarette should look like after you smoke it.
It's really, like you said, it's somebody paying attention to those details and it pays off in how coherent this plot rolls. Anyway,
I want to talk about a minor detail in this porno shop.
I know you do.
Which
I just don't know
which
one.
Actually, this is a costuming thing.
Mm-hmm.
So when Columbo enters, he runs into this perv, this weirdo creep who's hanging out and has just made a purchase. And this weirdo creep is dressed exactly like Columbo.
They're both wearing the same trench coat.
They're wearing
the same raincoat.
I think they're wearing the same tie. I think they might even be wearing the same suit.
No, the suit's different.
I think they are dressed
The suit's different. Yeah. The guy's suit is, you can just see a little bit of the lapels on the sides and it's a patterned. Yeah. It's not the same.
Oh, okay.
It's just they're wearing the same.
I think they missed a trick then. He should have been wearing the exact... He should have just been dressed as
Columbo.
A
frumpy kind of grayish... Yeah.
Yeah. Gray suit and with a weird, badly tied green tie.
Oh, my God. It's not... But, right, which is like... That joke, is like staring you in the face the moment that Columbo walks into a porno shop in the early 90s in a trench coat. And I mean, not to mention, like, when he is walking down the street towards it, he is hit on by like a biker lady who is hanging around a payphone with her biker pals. But it is like, it's one of those things where I was like, oh, is she hitting on him? And then it's like he walks into a porno shop and I was like, oh, she's fucking making fun of him because she sees the trench coat. And and then and that leads us to this fucking creeper who is buying what appears to be like five or six videos all at once, because the proprietor has like the giant boxes, the giant VHS boxes that he is clearly going to put back on the shelves. Anyway, sorry.
Why would you restock? Just realized that porno rental was a thing, and I immediately became disenchanted with the entire procedure.
That didn't take long.
I know. Well, it's, you know, you're remembering the sort of the sparkly Halcyon thing, and then you get down to the actual logistics of jerking it in the 90s, and it was grim. It was a grim period.
Well, clearly, because this guy was like, oh, looks like we're both gonna get lucky tonight.
We're gonna have a good time tonight, huh?
Yeah. And then like winks at him as he, it's this guy really just masterclass in being
I'll
creep.
Tell you what though, that guy's living his life, you know. What he's living life out loud,
man. Listen, I'm not judging that dude for like renting or buying or whatever, like five port. It's just, there is something a little weird when he looks at another dude who's just walked into the shop and is like, oh, looks like we're both going to go home and masturbate until we pass out. It's like, what, really? Why do you got to make this about? Yeah. Why do you got to involve everybody in your process?
Well, you know, it is a process. That's the thing. We're all working and trying to get to the same end.
I guess that's true.
And you know, who among us? So Columbo it takes this information and confronts Wade with this dirty pornography past.
At a soiree, no less.
At a soiree, like at the policeman's ball.
Like, to be clear, like, they're wearing tuxedos, you know, and, like, formal.
Columbo in a tux.
Formal gowns.
It's
not a good tux. It's nasty. It's, like, not. It's a notch collar.
Tux,
it's pre-tied. And then the shirt is, like, it's not a ruffled shirt, but it's the,
It's like the shirt that I wore when I did performances in my high school band.
Oh, I was gonna,
like, it's that level.
I was gonna say it's similar to the wingtip collar tux shirt that I wore for show choir. So yeah.
I mean, yes, we're essentially talking about the same thing.
Yep.
Yeah, you put a vest over that and you're good to go, right?
Yeah. Well, no, I had a tux, and like, I'm pretty sure it was also like notch two button, like pretty much as bad as the one that Columbo's wearing, but you know.
It's like a Ben, it's like a Ben origin story. We're working through a lot. This is half a podcast and half a therapy session for the two of us. he confronts him about it. They don't seem concerned about the other implications of this porno, but just that what it might do to his reputation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, by this point, obviously they've just totally dropped any of the like subplot stuff or
about
mentioning
the
about
legality
like,
of the, right, of
the
pornography.
The girl
right.
in it is underage, and that is kind of a big issue.
I mean, it wasn't strictly legal to be in pornography at this time.
I don't remember what the.
I don't know. I think it was still legally questionable.
Yeah, there's a
like in general.
There's a ruling that happened that was about like basically where someone the argument was, if you're saying this is like prostitution, you know, like where there is or sex work, like. Basically, the parallel that they drew, I think, in the legal case was the idea that, like, in that exchange where this one person is paying this other person for a sex act, like, basically they were saying, like, if you are saying that these films are the same way rather than a performance or whatever, then then everyone is, you know, is the client, kind of in this way of, like, then you'd have to arrest everybody. I don't... I don't remember all the details, and sorry, it's real vague. I'm just, you know, it's rare that I would have a reason to even think about the legal precedent that...
Neither of us are experts in porn law.
Right.
Or any type of law, really.
Oh, definitely.
We know murder is illegal.
That's about... generally. That's about it.
I'd say that's probably the extent of our knowledge.
Of our legal expertise?
Don't do the crime if you can't do the time. That's what I know. Don't do it. Don't go to bed with no price on your head.
But yeah, so he mentions it and Wade is essentially like, that was a long time ago. Why do you got to bring that up? And then it's very much like, I would really appreciate it if you didn't fucking say anything about this. And is angry. Like in the way where it's like,
how dare you?
Yeah, it's that thing where it's like, okay, yeah, I'm ashamed of it.
Why are you bringing up my pornography?
But it's like, it's also without anyone mentioning it, it is so clearly establishing motive. And it's like, oh yeah, clearly he's mad enough that he would do some shit over that.
Yeah. The thing that gets him finally is twofold. One, so this security camera footage, he's when he's entering in the morning, when he comes in the next day, there's a man trimming his bush, and he says, "Hey, I did the stuff by the window, and I'm gonna finish the rest up in a bit." And he's like, "Thank you, Jose," and walks into his
also,
office.
Also, very obviously an 80-yard bit.
Yes, so incredibly.
That's so part of like, the.
Thank you, Jose.
Yeah. Well, so second team.
Unit.
Yeah. Thank you. Second unit shoots. That hedge thing, that ADR, I think is a clear indicator that like all that stuff got done along with those second unit pickups, and probably after someone saw a rough cut and went, "This doesn't make any fucking sense. I need to see somebody do this stuff."
This doesn't make any goddamn sense. Yeah. but yes, when he's gets there in the morning, the next day the hedge has been trimmed, but obviously the previous night it wasn't trimmed.
Yeah.
So it looks like he came in the morning to a trimmed hedge and lived at night, but somehow
the hedge like
untrimmed itself.
Yeah, grew the equivalent of several weeks worth of growth overnight.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about that, this is obviously, listen, this is a fiction, but motion cameras are not sensitive enough to be able to tell whether or not something is happening on the other side of the glass.
Mm.
So there would have been like, you know, a half an hour of Jose trimming the trimming the hedge, you know, right before George Hamilton walks in, which I feel like could establish something.
Yeah.
But it's
all right. I mean, the way that they set it up.
Maybe that's why it took him so long in the edit bay, as he was editing all of Jose.
Right.
He was like, God, there's so much Jose in this.
Yeah. But as far as like TV stuff works, it is an effective illustration of, you know, his sort of fatal mistake.
It's just a little thing.
One of his many sort of little mistakes on this.
And then the good girl, the sweet lab, turns out to be the linchpin for the whole thing.
Yep.
Because he says he never went to the house. But there are scratches on his car. When Columbo pulled up to the house, this lab jumped up and scratched up Columbo's car. They say it's little scratches, not much to worry about. When they show the photos, it's pretty big fucking scratches.
Yeah, those are pretty bad.
They really needed them to read on camera, I guess, and they really went for it. Like, in HD, it seems pretty serious.
Yeah, they really swung for the fences with those scratches. And it's funny because I honestly wondered if they were going to take a slightly different route about the dog. Because what happens is Columbo gets the idea because he goes to pick up Dog from the vet for grooming.
His dog. Yep.
And the vet mentions that Mrs.
Hold on a second.
Yeah, no worries.
There's been a murder.
Yeah. But when he picks up Dog, the vet mentions that Mrs. Columbo basically agreed to have the vet give the dog a nail trimming. And, you know, Columbo has his aha moment about the other dog and nails.
Gets a pedicure.
Right.
A pedicure. Yeah.
Then he goes and gets a pedicure. No. But when he had that moment, because that comes after after Columbo and we have this semi-comic relief moment of backing up their cars and then trying to pull into the same spot like multiple times until they run into each other. And Ham like loses his shit, and then he goes on about his paint and how it's this special paint and everything. He did. He went ham.
He went ham, Anna.
Yeah. But that's the thing. When they started talking about like, ham, oh, this rare paint, like it made me think, especially after the vet scene, like, oh, you're going to check that dog's nails for this specific paint. Which is more or less where they were headed. They didn't quite
get there,
but
close enough. Luckily, this dog had some sort of accident where it's missing a claw.
Convenient.
So that it makes a very, very specific scratch pattern on the door.
It's like a fingerprint. No, it's nothing like
and
that.
And he said, when they say like, oh, but, you know, come with me and bring the macro lens.
Yeah.
Like the macro lens would be for shooting something very, very small.
Mm.
But you do not need a macro lens to see these scratches.
No.
They are, it just feel like maybe they tried to get the, they tried to do little scratches, but it wasn't reading. And they're like, when they were doing back to do the second unit, they had like the little scratches and they're like, this didn't work. Just make big fucking scratches in it. Cause there's no George Hamilton is shown to be like very particular about his car. There's no way he wouldn't notice these huge scratches in the driver's side window, like right under where the window is. It's crazy.
It's like the part of the door you would probably be looking at when you opened the door to get into the car.
Exactly.
I mean,
it's the first thing you look at in the car, basically, as you were walking towards it. You would look to where you were going to get into it. You would see these these like 3-inch long scratches.
Yeah. Also, speaking of this scene, can we fucking talk about how when Columbo gets out these fucking photos of the scratches, what his fucking nails look like? Jesus.
Okay. I didn't think that's what you were going to say. I thought what you were going to say is, why is that fucking kid there?
Oh.
Hey, Columbo.
I mean.
Why is that kid there?
I can tell you.
So when Columbo goes to the house.
I guess the kid owns the dog, but the real reason that kid is there.
The kid doesn't own the dog.
Yeah.
That's Bud's dog.
It's just like, the kid is there, I think, because he is wearing a fucking t-shirt that has a brand logo on it on the chest that says, gotcha. That's why the kid's there, dude.
Oh,
yeah.
It's a fun ironic. It's like the escape to death. It's ironic.
Well, it's just like when that kid comes over and is like, you know, and is all over the dog. It's like they sort of play it like, oh, this is the kid's. And it's like, no, it's Bud's dog. That kid is just.
The kid knows him.
Yeah.
And they're and is friends with this dog. The kid is friends
with
this dog.
But not Bud. Yeah.
And so when they needed to bring the dog to George Hamilton's office for this reveal, which. Not necessary.
No.
There's no reason to. He could have brought a photo of the dog.
Yeah.
But for some reason, they needed to bring the dog, and they also needed to bring this neighbor kid to a murder.
I mean,
a murderer.
I think that part is just about. I think there's a touch of that sort of like, either Columbo is fucking with him, or Columbo has brought both the real dog and the child because he is. Looking to see if Ham makes any sort of change in expression when they walk through his office door. Because he definitely, you know, there is that sort of recognition, but it's also like by that point, like, you know, the trap's fucking shut anyway.
Yeah.
But it's all about those car scratches. Although let me find this in my notes real quick because I wrote it down and it was real good.
Excited.
No, I mean, it's just the like, it's just that thing. There it is. It's just like Columbo showing up, like for that scene. He basically is like creeping around on set after everybody else has left.
He's brought several other police people with him, and he's sort of like,
one of them's like hiding in the bathroom with a tape recorder and kind of all of that. But it's great because he just kind of springs himself on Ham when Ham thinks everyone's gone home. But everybody else from work has gone to get Mexican food together.
Yeah.
And so he's just there by himself, and then Columbo pops out. But the thing is, Columbo says to him, I saw the tape.
Right.
And lets it hang a little bit before he clarifies that he's talking about the security tape and not the porno.
Why? What were you thinking of?
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of one of the great bits that I appreciate. So it's like, yeah. There was this moment where it felt like he was going to say, I saw the tape. Nice dong.
You got a good fuck style, my
yeah.
man.
I'm impressed. You really, you had some stamina when you were younger.
You really did
yeah.
it.
No, but yeah, it is one of those, and again, I know that it is written to be played like that. It's just kind of amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really like this episode. It's interesting. I looked to see who wrote it, mm-hmm. and there are three women credited with writing it. This appears to be their only credit period with as far as writing.
Huh.
The one of them, April Raynell, mm-hmm. Has a miscellaneous crew as the assistant to Mr. Falk on the movie Cookie.
Okay.
2 years previous. And then one of the other ones, I can't remember which one, but one of the other ones has a credit as on a soundtrack.
Hmm.
But this is their only writing credit for all three of them.
That's super weird. And also a little bit of
strange.
A bummer, because I would have liked to see what other episodes this writing team knocked out.
Yeah, you wonder who was responsible. Like when you have a three-person writing team, mm-hmm. you wonder who is responsible and what's the story there, because it's interesting.
Yeah.
But I couldn't find any information about that in the episode. You can also kind of tell that this episode was written by three women, because there are numerous characters who are women who are not just, there is a woman assistant, mm-hmm. but there are several characters who are just women and they don't need to, like,
right.
there's no reason. It's such a weird, like, Columbo needs to justify whenever there's a woman on screen, like, oh, that's an assistant, don't worry, it's fine.
Yeah.
But this episode just has like the producer of
right.
the television show is a
well, it's
is,
like
is
yeah
a woman,
you have like
they,
Max
nobody comments
yeah,
on
and
it.
You have all of, yeah there's no like oh a woman kind of I mean there's other shit there's like yeah. that scene with the dancers that you know where Columbo is you know chasing down Ham
sure.
you know in the you know TV
and
station
ogling the sexy dancers
talking about how he likes to watch them dance you know it's like about yeah, watching them dance
such long legs
yes their legs which is
there are a couple the gentlemen as well have some very tight outfits there's one guy who has like a bikini top
oh
on.
Yeah
there's some real
I mean
it's some real wonderful
look every one
90s.
Of those dancers is in amazing 90s neon but also
yeah.
they are all people in very good shape
yeah.
really good work it's just
doing like legit
yeah
there was choreography in this like somebody went
popping
to the
and locking
actually,
sorry I just wanted to
yeah.
say that.
You just wanted to say popping and locking,
yeah.
just sort of
can you,
irrespective of
yeah,
everything.
Can you blame me?
No, I mean,
yeah.
I suppose I can.
I mean, that's, yeah.
Yeah, and the song being played is Jerk Out by The Time.
Ooh.
And the lyricist
no.
is...
No, no.
The lyricist is Prince. Come on, it's Prince singing. I mean, it definitely sounds like him.
Just
I was
Jerk
like,
Out.
I think
it's
that's
just
Prince.
The name. The name just made me laugh yeah. because, you know, the porno. And I'm sure that was...
I understand.
Yeah.
I think that was probably,
yeah.
I mean, that was definitely the subtext that Prince had in mind
mm-hmm.
when he wrote that song. But
I love
yeah.
to watch them dance. They got great legs. That's what he says.
It's, you know, I mean, it's a standard Prince song, so there's a lot of sexual innuendo.
Yeah, which is fine, but like, I'm still just a little skeezed out when Detective Grandpa is like, I like seeing them legs. Like, it's just...
a little something for daddy.
Right. It's like, I'm not comfortable. I need an adult, but not this kind of adult, a better adult. Anyway. yeah.
Yeah, I like this episode. I think it is a good episode of 90s Columbo.
yeah, I mean it's fun and I really enjoyed Hamilton as the villain cuz
yep.
he is kind of fun
oh,
to watch.
Coming back. Ooh. Here they come.
Yeah. Yeah. I got nothing. Yeah, I think Hamilton is a really good foil for, you know, for Falk and for Columbo in this. It's a lot of fun to watch him play this role.
There are only five actors who played the murderer more than once on Columbo, and George Hamilton is one of them. Mm-hmm. Can you tell? I want to see if you can guess the other ones, or you can tell me all the other ones.
Well, I mean, I know there's McGoohan, and I know there's Culp, and then... I've blanked on his name, but I feel like we've seen him do more than one murder way early on. He was in the pilot, not the adapted stage play, but the other one.
That would be Sean Cassidy's dad.
Jack Cassidy, right?
Jack Cassidy. Yeah. Yep. And then there's one more, and we haven't seen him in his second episode, but it's still coming.
I'm sure I will recognize when it comes. I mean, unless you just want to drop the name, that's fine.
Definitely. I mean, it's Bill Shatner.
Yeah, of course. Of course it is.
Coming up. I'm excited about it.
Oh, boy. 90s Shatner.
It's near the end, but it's I think it might actually even be 2000 or like late 90s Shatner.
So you mean
big Bill Shatner.
Big Bill. So would that be... You probably know these dates more. When did Star Trek Generations come out?
Generations, I believe, came out around 98, okay. I think.
Well, yeah. So if this is like close to 2000s, then it's about what I was hoping, is that we would get the long-dead hero pulled out of time and space and the Nexus to help us, defeat, you know. Yeah, I got... You know what I mean?
There's a little bit of that.
That kind of Shatner.
His final episode... I'm sorry, so I was completely wrong. His final episode is 94, and actually Generations came out the same year, 1994.
Dang!
So there you go. I had no idea it was that early.
Me
in the
either, honestly, because in my mind, I was thinking like, early 90s. That's like Undiscovered Country, right?
I think Undiscovered Country is the first one... That's not true. I saw four in theaters, and Undiscovered Country, I saw 91. I would have also seen that in theaters. I think I also probably saw Final Frontier in theaters, unfortunately.
Yeah,
I did.
I saw that one in theaters because I still remember having seen that with friends and standing around in the parking lot outside making jokes that Star Trek VI was just going to be called The Apology, and it would just be Shatner coming onto screen to apologize for how terrible V was.
Little did you know, Bill Shatner doesn't apologize for anything.
Oh, yeah, not unless someone orders him to. I've heard that story before.
Do you want to talk about the fashion?
I mean...
Since we're kind of getting winding down.
Hamilton always knew how to dress himself.
yes.
No, seriously, that's...
No, he's a fashion plate. He looks like a spiral cut ham, but he looks good.
Yeah. Well, so
from the neck down, he always looks good.
And that's the thing, right? So I knew some little kind of trivia bits, like I knew that, like, as Hamilton, you know, got to be kind of middle aged and a little older, that he got in the habit of basically having like one jacket or one suit that he would always carry around, and he would swap the buttons out depending on how formal the event was. So he'd go from normal buttons to like the gold buttons for like, you know, a navy blazer kind of classic style, you know, and he'd swap them for like fabric covered buttons if he was going to like a formal, you know, tuxedo style event kind of thing.
All right.
But that's like, that's the distillation, you know, after he, you know, had so many suits that he had a dry cleaning rotator rack installed in his closet so that he could just spin the rack out. And on it were suits that included all of their like accessorizing and everything, basically ready to go outfits that he would just spin out and then just pull one out. But that's all kind of fun, you know, whatever. But so the thing about Hamilton and his style and his presentation, you know, he's always been this sort of, you know, like overly tanned, you know, good looking kind of rich playboy sort of vibe, except he's from Arkansas, and and that's not his background at all. It's that when he signed his first contract with a studio, you know, they basically made up a sort of fake backstory so that he, you know, had more of this sort of like Cary Grant, you know, like this sort of classic Hollywood sort of, you know, suave kind of man, you know, around the town. And he actually had bought like his first suits, you know, basically he had thrifted like bespoke suits, you know, and then learned, basically studied all this crap in the wardrobes and stuff in MGM studios and whatever, to, you know, that these sort of golden era Hollywood actors had worn, and paid attention to sort of how all of that stuff worked. And then ultimately it's just, pardon me, he was a guy who was in an era where movie stars weren't consistently like doing their clothes shopping on like Savile Row, and you know, with bespoke, you know, like tailors of, you know, hundreds of years of expertise in London, but that is what Hamilton was doing. He essentially followed in those footsteps, and that's part of what made him sort of stand out.
What have I done to deserve all this talk about clothing?
You asked me to do this podcast.
I did ask that.
This is your fault, is what I'm telling you.
I did ask to do this podcast. I didn't specifically ask for you to talk to me about lapels for 7 minutes, but here we are.
You should have known.
Well, I know now.
Yeah.
It's too late to do anything about it. So I think that's going to do it for this week. Well, we'll see how much of that makes the edit. I think that's going to do it for this week's Clum Boys. I'm Mac.
I'm Ben.
And just one more thing.
Yeah?
Remember, keep your eyes open and stay alert.
Oh my God, that music.
Clum Boys is hosted by Mac Johnson and Ben Swallow. You can follow them on Twitter at MacJ and at DandyGeek. The Clum Boys theme is by Seth Boyer. For more information about this and other great Waffle Media projects, you can go to waffle.media. Thanks for listening.